Hey, folks, you probably know that I've got some issues with food, but you should also know that my issues might not be your issues. And if you're looking to get your food issues under control, what works for me might not work for you. That's what's great about Noom. Noom builds individualized weight management plans that meet your personal needs. And they've got a great app so you can see your goals clearly. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold. Yes. Yes. Let's do the show.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's it going? How's it going out there? Today on the show, I talked to Joe Mandy. Mandy's been here before. I like Mandy a lot. He's a very bright guy, very funny guy. He was a writer on shows like Parks and Recreation, The Kroll Show, The Good Place. He's currently on Hacks, where he's also a writer and producer. He's the guy at the hotel. He's also been on this show several times in the past, episodes 142, 213, 832. He's got some great stories that made it into our book, Waiting for the Punch. So it was a pleasure to have him back again. Tonight, I'm in Munhall, Pennsylvania, outside Pittsburgh at the Carnegie Library Music Hall. Tomorrow, I'll be in Cleveland, Ohio, at Playhouse Square. Saturday, Detroit, Michigan, at the Royal Oak Music Theater. Then I'm back at Largo in L.A. next Tuesday, May 14th. I love Pittsburgh. I'm hoping that while I'm here, that love remains. I don't know. I just think it's a beautiful city. And every time I come, I'm like, this is a beautiful city. Look at these. There's a little area with the cobblestone street stuff and a few stores I like. Yeah, it must be a great city. It's got a good coffee shop. And what is this place? Oh, I could live here. So these rescheduled dates, folks, I apologize. Santa Barbara, California, Libero Theater. That will now be on January 30th, 2025. San Luis Obispo, California at the Fremont. That's now January 31st. Monterey, California at the Golden State Theater, February 1st. Iowa City at the Engler Theater, February 13th. Des Moines, Iowa at Hoyt Sherman Place, February 14th. Kansas City, Missouri at the Midland Theater, February 15th. Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel, February 20th. Nashville, Tennessee at the Polk Theater, February 21st. Louisville, Kentucky at the Kentucky Center for the Performing Arts, February 22nd. Lexington, Kentucky at the Lexington Opera House, February 23rd. Durham, North Carolina at the Carolina Theater, March 21st. Charlotte, North Carolina at the Knight Theater, March 22nd. Charleston, South Carolina at the Charleston Music Hall, March 23rd. For all ticket links, go to WTFpod.com. It's May, folks, and I bet a lot of you are thinking about summer plans. Summer plans usually means travel, and travel usually means worrying about your home while you're away. Don't I know it? But one of the ways you can ease your worry is by having award-winning home security, and we've been recommending Simply Safe for 8 years as the easiest way to get peace of mind when you're away from home. When you have home security, you want to know all the bases are taken care of. That's why we have Simply Safe monitoring both inside and out, and we have sensors that will detect break-ins, shattered glass, even movement. And I don't have to worry about getting a false alarm because of my cats. It's whole home protection, and it costs less than $1 a day. That's a bargain for 24/7 professional monitoring. Plus, you don't have to sign any contracts, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Simply Safe already provides real peace of mind to us here at WTF and to many WTF listeners as well. I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/WTF. There's no safe like Simply Safe. Anxiety is high, folks. I don't know what to tell you. I got to go, you know, I'm going to do these dates, and then I'm going to be up and down from Vancouver, and I got to get everything set up. Got someone staying at the house, got to worry about the cats. I get very emotionally attached to the cats. But the level of anxiety I have going into this job is overwhelming, and it's hard for me to manage. So I'm digging around inside of myself. I'm trying to think, you know, why can't I just frame this anxiety as something that my mind is generating. Things will probably be okay. I just have to take the steps necessary to make myself feel grounded and comfortable in the work I have to do, and even if that means spending time away from home. Although I come back, I'm coming back. It's in the paperwork. I'm coming back every couple weeks to do what I got to do some podcasts, to regroup, to sort of spend some time with the cats, with Kit, and deal. But there's something about going away that it is very hard for me, even when I'm just traveling for 3 or 4 days. Anytime I have to leave the little small circles of my patterns, my brain just fucking loses its mind, and I'm thinking back on it. I'm trying to figure out what it is, and I've always had it, and it has something to do, surprise, with boundaryless parents. Surprise. I know. Look, I talk the psycho babble here and there, but there's no end to the seemingly, you know, deepening chasm, the rabbit hole of, you know, I don't want to say trauma as in a big way, but just in terms of being sort of emotionally incapacitated, but also anxiety wise. A couple of times when I was younger, I went to a sleepaway camp. I'm not bragging, but I remember being dropped off by my parents, maybe by my mom, and just being physically ill and emotionally overwrought and crying and just unable to sort of even begin to adjust to this new thing, this new place, these new people, a cabin, not great bathroom situations, you know, bunk beds. It's chilly out there. And I'm just like, why? Why? And I would be fucking incapacitated for days. That's who I was. I may not sound like this guy now or that guy now, but that's the guy that lives inside of me. Just utter separation anxiety, I guess. And that was, I guess, since I was a kid. And because of all that, you know, I live a life of, you know, working against that cognitively. Yeah, I think I'm petrified of almost everything, many major change. But I have learned through doing comedy, through doing drugs, from doing any type of insane thing that I've done or any type of risky thing that I've done, that, you know, if I don't put myself in the position, you know, I'm not going to function. I just have to, you know, overcome the fears in that moment and make the transition. Some therapist told me about this. He said that it's almost everything that I do on the spectrum of personal life is some sort of almost compulsive drive for what he called primal union. Kind of sticks with me, man. Primal union. This is the idea that when you're born, you are sort of symbiotically, emotionally, spiritually, physically almost connected to your mother. It's a deep connection. You are an appendage, and you remain an emotional appendage one way or the other. And depending on how your parent was, who the fuck knows what that means. But if at some point your parent, your mom, or whoever's in charge doesn't release you on some level into a emotional space where you can sort of develop yourself, if there's panic, if there's worry, if there's a complete absorption of your emotional being by that parent, and you never make that shift, they never put a boundary up and go like, you got to take some hits. You got to get up and go again. You got to, like, you know, brush yourself off and figure out how you're going to handle that. If they step into that process for too long, once you're released into the wild, you have no capacity for, you know, functioning emotionally, because now you're just missing a part. And I guess I believe that, the idea that, hey, man, after a certain age, no one's going to come help you. You're on your own, pal. Hope you can take care of yourself. Can ya? Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? I'm one of them. Between streaming services and apps and random things you signed up for, it just gets to be too much. And if you're like me, you lose track. But thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the subscriptions I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. With the Rocket Money app, you can see all your paid subscriptions in one place, so it's easy to cancel the ones you don't use or don't want. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate a refund for you on the last couple months of unwanted spending. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WTF. That's rocketmoney.com/WTF. Stop wasting cash. Stop it. So look, folks, why can't I ever get my glasses prescriptions correct? Why does that always happen? I picked out some frames for my character, and I had Dr. Kane, you know, make the glasses, but he said I needed a checkup. I got the checkup, and now, like, I got a prescription, and I can't adjust to it. It makes me nauseous. I can't adjust to the new prescription, and now I've got to go back. And this is with every time I've gotten a prescription for my glasses, I've had to get it redone at least once. What the fuck is, it's just, it never stops. And I gotta see. You know what I'm saying? I have to see. I'm not adjusting to being 60 well. I just want you to know that. And it's not, I feel fine, I'm working and everything else. But man, there's a weight to it. There's a weight. There's an oncoming darkness to it on top of the oncoming darkness of everything else. But I've got a flashlight, and you know, when I go back and get the lenses changed, I'll have glasses. So look, Joe Mandy, he's performing at Dynasty Typewriter in LA tomorrow. That's Friday, May 10th, as part of the Netflix is a Joke Festival. You can go to dynastytypewriter.com for tickets. Very funny guy. He's been here before. I see him socially sometimes. Always enjoy seeing Joe. This is me talking to Joe Mandy. What, you got another job or something? It's early. It's 10 in the morning.
I just wake up, man. Yeah.
You want to wake cans? I wake up. I'm up early.
Yeah.
I don't sweep for shit.
But I do, No, I've got a sweet gig right now.
Yeah.
Where I work 3 days a week on a show. So.
What show?
A Mindy Kaling, an untitled Mindy Kaling show about basketball.
I don't know anything about basketball.
I know a lot about basketball.
You do?
Yeah.
That's your thing?
Yeah.
I saw a picture of you and Mulaney at courtside.
Yes, courtside. That's the one rich guy thing I fully understand.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, who's rich guy? Are you rich guying it on that one? Or is
no,
Mulaney?
No. Neither of us. Those were Ari Emanuel's tickets, I believe.
Yeah.
So we're just like two bums that got tickets through his agency.
Who's with Ari? Is Mulaney with
yeah,
that guy?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't understand how all that stuff works. You guys are working at a much higher level.
I mean, I'm just I'm a barnacle on that ship. But like, he knows that if there's courtside seats, that I'm the first person to call.
Does he go often?
I mean, he must. I mean, I know he's got a hookup at Knicks games.
Yeah.
When he's in New York.
Mulaney does?
Yeah.
He's a basketball freak?
I think he enjoys basketball, but I the experience of sitting courtside is so amazing and special that I think even if you're not into basketball,
it's like being on drugs, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just like this, like you hear the players talking shit to each other, and
yeah,
like,
and you're right there with all the giants.
Yes, yes, it's thrilling,
and you can feel the floors bounce mm-hmm. and shit.
Yeah,
it's like going, like, even if you don't like sports, it's exciting.
Yes, yeah,
you just watch it.
Just the sensory,
yeah,
overload.
Even like, it's weird. Even like a baseball game. I'm not, you know, you go sit in a stadium.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not the same, but you feel nice.
Right, right. But you're not like right there.
No, but it's meditative.
Yes.
Whereas basketball, I don't think so.
No.
And it's a very good position to be in for photographs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's...
I saw a picture of you.
Right, right. Who's this bozo? Yeah.
There's always a bozo with the main bozo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that was funny. It was that, you know, they also always go in on the Jumbotron. You know, they zoom in on your the famous person. And I always like poke my head in. You know, I gotta get in there. You know, for just for promo.
Oh my God! So what? Was that Michael Clayton thing yours originally?
Yeah. Those yard signs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Well, I know because, like, I think I've said that on my podcast.
Yeah. Oh, really? Like that exact one?
I've been you know, pushing Michael Clayton for a decade.
Yeah, same. It's my favorite movie of the 21st century, I think.
You too?
Yeah.
I watch it all the time, I talk about it constantly. I talked about it with Clooney. I've talked about it. Like, who else have I talked about it? Who directed that? Was that a Gilroy?
Yeah.
It was a Gilroy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get over that movie.
I know. It's so well done. I think it's the best execution scene in any movie. Tom Wilkinson's performance in that as a overeducated
manic bipolar guy.
Yeah.
Who are you, Michael?
Yeah.
What's that line?
It's I'm not the enemy, then who are you?
Yeah. Who are you?
Yeah.
People are fucking incomprehensible.
Yes.
That's the best. So many quotables.
I know.
And when Tilda Swinton drops to her knees, that's insane.
I mean, what an ending. I don't know. It is funny. I made those signs that it's a big part of my personality, and I've had friends like Rory Scovel was like, I'm gonna watch this movie, and then like halfway through he texted me and he was like, so do you like this movie as a bit?
Really?
You know, so some people just like
don't fully see
the
appeal. I can't even understand that.
Yeah.
To me it was like one of the last grown up movies.
Mm.
Like it was of a time where like there's just movies. Big movies with big stars are rarely made for adults.
That's true. Yeah, the legal thriller has sort of gone by the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah, a lot of them have, but I don't know. I just, I can watch it. I'll just start it and watch the whole thing. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Every time.
Me too.
The brother, it's great. Everybody's great. Oh my God. Just thinking about it. The drugged up brother and then the cop brother.
Yep.
Good family. New York, Clooney, the last scene in the cab, great.
I love that. We could spend the whole
time talking.
I'm happy
just
to
Michael
do
Clooney.
It. Yeah.
Like, how many times a year do you watch it?
Oh, at least 3 times.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I'm always happy to see it pop up.
Me too. Yeah, well, it's one of those movies, it's like, I feel the same way about, like, The Fugitive. There's certain movies that if it's on TV, I'll watch it to the end.
Yeah, Goodfellas, any of this, Casino, watch. Yeah,
Casino Rules, yeah.
Yeah, I watched Black Mass, like, 3 or 4 times on the road recently, because it was on HBO.
That's the...
Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger movie.
Yes, yeah, Adam Scott's in that.
He is. He plays the FBI guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joel Edgerton, fucking insane. It's an insane movie.
I need to see that. I don't know if I actually...
Initially, I was a little put off by the sort of Nosferatu-ness of Depp and makeup as Whitey Bulger.
Well, I mean, he's at a point now where they have to put makeup on him to look less...
Weird?
Nosferatu-esque.
Less monstrous?
Yes.
But over time, over watching it, it's... what's that guy's name who directed it? Scott Cooper, I think. He did Pale Blue Eye and Hostiles, you know, with Christian Bale.
Oh, right. But
that movie, like they, you know, most of the time, Boston accent, horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
All of them nail it.
Oh, that rules. Yeah, that's like the town is hard to watch.
It's for a little, that all over the place. Yeah. No, they all nail it. And Edgerton's character is just insane sort of like corrupt FBI guy, but, you know, thinking he's doing the right thing. And he's just like so full. You got to watch it.
Yeah, I will. I
just watched it several times. I just pick it up and it became better and better.
That's your like road movie?
No, it was just on HBO.
Oh,
it
I
just
see,
happened
I
to
see.
Be timing out when I get back to a room and I turn on the TV. I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch it again.
Right.
And Jesse Plemons is in it.
Uh-huh.
And that guy.
He rules.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
But what's that other guy's name? I interviewed him too.
Barack Obama.
Yes, he's got a small part, and he does the accent really well.
Oh,
and
good,
wouldn't,
yeah.
Rory Cochrane.
Oh.
Do you know that guy?
Rory Cochrane.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know that guy?
No.
Dazed and Confused. That's right, he was in Dazed and Confused.
Okay, then yes.
He was the kid, the long-haired kid
with
the dollar bill.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he turned into a very... peculiar older man.
That rules.
A very intense, scary dude. The reason I'm talking about it is because I've never seen someone portray a mobster where I saw in their eyes, in a real way, that they had killed people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anytime you see a mobster, you're like, all right, well, De Niro's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Even Joe Pesci, when you watch him kill people, you kind of think he can kill people, but not quite.
Yeah.
But this guy, I'm like, he can fucking kill people.
Well, that's the thing is, like, even in that scene where he's like, am I a clown here to amuse you? It's like you kind of are like a little clown man. Like, I don't know.
But there's a moment there where he looks up with where he's fucking knife in the
right,
head.
Right. But it's still kind of funny.
Sure. Yeah. Well, he's hilarious. Yeah. That whole thing's hilarious. All right. So what I was talking to Brendan about, we've seen the full arc of something. Like, you know, like, remember when you were like the guy, the Twitter guy?
Yes.
That was big.
Yeah, it was.
You were big.
I was a real...
Do you remember how important it was?
A real rascal. Yeah, I've been doing a stand-up joke about that. That's sort of like the peak of like the internet for me was around that time. There were like no consequences. I was an absolute terrorist.
You were like going after corporations
and like politicians. Yeah. I used to just... on a daily basis try to ruin Newt Gingrich's day. You know what I mean? And it like,
and
I know I
through?
Did. Yeah, like you could sort of sense, it was less professionalized, you know? So
right.
So people ran their own accounts.
Yeah.
And if you could find someone who was older, who had an account
yeah.
that clearly wasn't tech savvy,
right.
like I could ruin Newt Gingrich's day. It was important to me.
Did you ever get validation on that? I mean, did he ever respond?
No, I mean, it was just more like I was sending things to him constantly and I wasn't getting blocked, but he didn't have a lot of followers. So I knew it wasn't getting like lost
right.
in a sea of comments. Like, who's writing to Newt Gingrich? Right. You know?
Yeah. What was the best exchange where you really felt like you won something? What was the prize? The prize of engagement.
The prize of engagement was sort of the arc of my interactions with LaCroix sparkling water. it was such a like perfect story.
Was it epic?
It was pretty epic where I, as a bit, just sort of started claiming I was their celebrity spokesperson.
Yeah.
And they sort of indulged and sent me a bunch of soda and gear. I had t-shirts. And they were, whoever their social media team was like in on the bit. And
right.
was like allowing me to be to their spokesperson.
Yeah.
And then I did a show in Texas with Aziz, I believe. And I made some off-color joke about Ted Cruz. And by the time I got to the green room, there were people in the crowd who were so mad that they were... you know,
tweeting
at LaCroix that how could this person be associated with your brand? And it got up to the like CEO level. And like a week later, I got a cease and desist letter from LaCroix saying like I had to stop associating with their product and all
because
this
of Ted Cruz,
because of the joke I made about Ted Cruz.
What was that joke? I think we should repeat it.
Well, yeah, I would mean it was just sort of I was riffing on stage
and I
made a joke about how the joke was sort of like I would pay anyone in the crowd $1,000 if they could fling cum on Ted Cruz, like that scene in Silence of the Lambs. But then the joke wasn't about that. It was more like me trying to figure out logistically how I could like Venmo money to a stranger. And, you know, it was just sort of breaking down the impossibility of that.
Of getting someone a cum for hire.
Yeah. So that got sort of picked up and it upset some people. It upset my mom. My mom was a federal judge at the time. And so she was like, you've got to like make a statement saying that you were joking. And I was like, well, obviously I was joking. She's like, no, but if someone actually does it, you can get arrested for like inciting a terrorist cum attack. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, mom. And so then I wrote a thing on my Twitter that was like an apology, but I made sure to use the term fling cum at Ted Cruz like 30 times. And I don't think my mom thought that was like the best way to handle it. Yeah. I think it's difficult to have me as a son. Yeah. Yeah.
You made sure she saw it?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Of course. And I framed the, I have the cease and desist letter in my house.
Framed?
Yeah. Framed, of course.
From LaCroix.
Yeah. With like the LaCroix letterhead.
Well, you know, it's good to be a shit starter, but like, your mom's a federal judge where?
She retired, so I think we're safe now. She was in Philly and then at the end there in Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah.
How does, like, so you grew up in that?
Well, no, she became a judge right after she graduated from college.
She was a lawyer?
Yeah, both my parents were lawyers. Yeah.
I can't remember. I know we talked about it. And how long were you in New Mexico?
Until I was 11.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So not big memories. You ever go
back?
No,
I mean, yeah, I go back not a lot, like every few years. I love it. I mean, it's weird. It's still like, it still feels like home to me, you know, like just being like up in the mountains and the sunsets and the food.
Do you
and
remember,
all
that. Where was your house?
Up in the, near the tram.
Oh, so like, it was up there.
Sandia Mountains, yeah.
Oh, I was way down Northwest Valley.
Right.
We covered all this at some other point in time. I can't remember the last time you were on.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah, I was actually talking to someone.
Everyone's grown up now. It's
yeah,
kind of weird.
I know. It is weird. It is weird. I feel like I'm like 2 years away from getting introduced at little shows as like a
legend.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do that to me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I remember doing it to Todd Barry and making him so mad. You know, it's like.
Yeah, I don't know how it sits with me. Mm. You know, because it feels like it's sort of just shy of dead.
It feels like that, yeah? Yeah, I know.
Bobby Lee does it a lot to
me.
Oh,
does he?
A legend, yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm still doing really good comedy.
Right.
So just bring me up.
Right.
Fahim brought me up as a treat last night.
Okay. That's almost, infantile or something.
It's like, well, he's like, you know, sometimes guys stop by and this is a real treat. And he brings you up. I'm like, a treat? I'm here every fucking night.
Yeah. I mean, and also, I mean, like, I love your comedy. I don't know if it's like a treat.
I think the initial, for those who know me, the initial few seconds of seeing me,
for
that's
sure,
a treat.
For sure.
And then it's just kind of a hold
you,
on,
and then
rough
you,
ride.
You sort of settle into that stool.
Yeah, I did. I stand up. I don't sit too long on the 15-minute sets in the OR. I've been moving around a little bit more. I've been full of the beans lately, kind of old school.
Love it.
Kind of yelling, engaging,
yeah,
getting mad at audience members.
Hell yeah. That's what it's all about these days. Those are clips, baby.
Yeah, I don't. Do you tape them all?
No, no. Although I wish I had like this nightmare weekend in Phoenix.
That I know. I want to talk to you about that.
I wish I had taped the sets for like the opposite of what clips do for people. Just me, just like
I just feel like I can do crowd work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at it.
Yeah,
but like now I've made fun of it.
Uh-huh.
Of the clips.
Uh-huh.
I've made a quip making fun of the clips.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
But there's some part of me that's sort of like, why am I not just putting this shit up there?
Right.
The fuck difference does it make? And it would probably sell tickets.
I know it would. That's how it works now.
But do I want those people that would come to my show based on crowd work clips?
I guarantee you would not. Yeah. I can say with certainty.
Like, I don't think I'd be getting grown-ups.
No. Well, no.
Because they're not really watching TikTok,
not
are
on
they?
TikTok, no.
So, well, but what is your history with causing trouble on stage in a real way? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we talked at Moshe's party briefly about the Phoenix thing, and I think I actually said let's talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, right,
did I?
Right.
But I mean, with the Ted Cruz thing, it seems like you do it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything's gotten so much more. Even since the Ted Cruz thing, like,
yeah,
it's so much more like hostile and polarized, and
it's crazy.
Yeah, so like things are just charged in a way.
Yeah,
like I don't feel like I've changed at all, but
right.
just like the effect these things have on people is just like so much more intense than it used to be. You know?
And you don't like I go out. Well, if I'm at the store or something, it's everybody. But if I'm performing. Most of the time, people are coming to see me.
Right.
But you still go out and people don't necessarily know you.
Right. I mean, it's like half and half. I'll do shows like at rock clubs or that kind of
thing,
right?
Sure.
Those are my people.
Right.
But if I'm just like I just shot a special two weekends ago, and so I was just working everywhere.
Where?
I shot in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Where at?
This place called the Parkway Theater.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's great.
How many seats?
It's I'd say 300 or
so. That's good.
Yeah, it's like it feels like a. I mean, this is a very specific reference, but it's like Minneapolis Largo, if that makes sense.
Sure. Well, know? I mean, all of Minneapolis is Largo.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Minneapolis has been Largo for years.
Yeah, yeah.
I shot a special there. I love Minneapolis.
Yes.
I love working there. They're such a savvy community because they've had theater there. And mm-hmm. I think in no short, whatever that saying is, Garrison Keillor, I think did something to that town.
Right, right.
Not in a bad way.
No. But so I grew up there. That's where I went after New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
So, I loved
right.
it.
Yeah. We talked about the Somalians.
That's right.
the four buildings full of Somalians. Uh-huh. But they're a theater town and a rock town.
Right.
All right, so how long is the special? Just a full hour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel good.
It was a long time coming. I thought I was ready to shoot. I mean, I was ready to shoot something in 2020.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you heard what happened. And
everyone got sick.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I remember.
Or so they claim. No. So then I had that like year of like trying to remember how to do stand up, and then
did you have that problem?
I was just. I had like this solid sort of hour ready to go and then like trying to like remember how to do it, and then like feeling the that awful sort of acceptance that like, oh, well, a lot of this stuff isn't funny anymore, isn't going to work, and having to like kill those jokes off and start writing new stuff. And
I got to go do it tomorrow. I was doing it a lot.
Yeah.
But now it's been like 3-4 weeks since I've done the whole hour, and I don't even like the bits anymore.
Yes, right. Yeah. And so I had that feeling for, some of those jokes were 5 years old by the time I shot it. So I'm like, I am happy to just sort of
get rid of
cleanse
them.
Myself of a lot of that material. But then, I was really excited about the newer stuff too. So
what's funny though, once you get on stage with all the panic, if you've been doing it long enough, something happens.
Yeah.
You're not going to be like, oh no.
Right. Right.
What happens now? So what was the Phoenix thing?
So, I was preparing for this special taping and...
But this, where is it? Like,
this was House of Comedy?
I've never been to that place.
Yeah. And it was not my typical show.
You know,
I would say it was probably like 70-30, like 30% of the people there were there.
Just regular
for
people?
For me. And the rest were like people who go to
the House of Comedy 70%.
My people were vastly outnumbered.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. And
could you feel it?
Oh, right away. I mean, like I have a joke sort of making fun of sheriffs, like the idea of sheriffs.
Yeah.
Just how it's like an antiquated.
Oh, and they got Sheriff Joe there for years.
Yes, right. Yeah. And it normally does well. And it was crickets. And then I could just a piercing voice say, "We respect the police here." And I was like, oh no, like it's going to be a long night, right out the gate. And the first night I was just like really combative and.
You were there for four shows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so you had to keep going back.
Had to keep going back.
Every show was 70,
every show
30?
Was a nightmare. Yeah. Yeah.
Hour.
And my people really shrunk. They were scared.
They were.
For me, they were scared for themselves. So, like, they weren't, like...
Helping
in any way. And, like, why would I expect them to? But, it got, like, really hostile. It got really, immediately violent.
Every show?
Every show. Like, a lot of threats, a lot of...
Like what? So after, we respect the police.
Yeah.
What happens then? How do you hold it together? You're doing 50 minutes?
Yeah.
Bare minimum?
Yes. Oh, I mean, like, the second night, I had a thing on my phone set to 45 minutes, and then I... The last night, the last show, I literally walked off stage being like, thank you so much, and from the bottom of my heart, I really mean this, I hope you all get pulled over for DUIs tonight.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The struggle.
But it wasn't just like, Phoenix is special, because it wasn't just like, oh, these people are conservatives, I can deal with that.
Right.
I think, there is...
But they don't even exist anymore. They're just, most of them are monsters.
These people were like... like, that's where, like, I forgot that, like, that's where, like, QAnon sort of bred. You know what I mean? That's where it festered. So, like, these were, like, QAnon people. These were, like, you know, I said I was from L.A.
Aggressive election deniers.
Oh.
The recounters.
Yeah, they were the cyber ninjas. You yeah, know?
And,
like, yeah.
And Sheriff Joe kind of set the standard years ago. Mm-hmm. That whole kind of outdoor jail business.
Yes, right, exactly.
It's always been like the Wild West out there, right, in some
for
version.
Sure, yeah.
But it's also weirdly balanced. I mean, a lot of my first wife's family's from there. There's a lot of Jews there. There is sort of, they do, it's sort of a 50-50
absolutely
state.
And I was just like in the wrong part of
Phoenix.
You know, and in fact, there was one point where like this guy was yelling at me. He says he's going to beat me up or whatever. And I was like,
but what he said, like, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're on stage.
I'm on stage.
No one's helping.
No one's helping. And like, I'm going back and forth. You know, I'm like, well, if you can get your walker up here, you can try. You know what I mean? I'm like,
Getting laughs?
Not. You'd be shocked how little laughs I was getting and how like no one was leaving. It really felt like it was nightmarish. But at one point I was like, it is funny to me that like I have a sense that most of the people in this room feel like they're rights are being taken away in
every
some
day.
Form.
Yeah.
And this country's going to hell. And it's like, at the same time, you all live on golf courses.
Yeah.
Like your life is like idyllic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you live in a city that's in, like humans shouldn't be able to live here, but
there shouldn't even be water there.
Yes. But for like the technology and the invention.
Yeah, but it's the same with all of it. Yeah, all the grievance people are just addicted to grievances.
Yes.
And they just sit there and let their computer generate grievances, and they don't even go outside. Or if they do,
they do. It's like
nice.
It's
fine.
Going to the Starbucks drive thru.
Sure.
You know, yeah. No, it was 45 minutes of
were
that,
you able to, like, because I know that feeling. I've been in that place before where you're like, okay, well, you'll like this one.
Yes, yes, right. Yes, you know, and then I'd be like, well, you know, obviously I live in LA, I work in television.
Yeah.
And then someone would be like, you're a pedophile. And I'd be like,
come on.
You know, yeah, crazy. I mean, that is my fault that was my only credit when I was introduced. this next guy's a pedophile. No, but it was like,
That's full QAnon.
It was full QAnon. I have a joke where, very simple joke, making fun of Nazis and how like Nazis have rebranded.
Oh, yeah.
So they're, you know, Proud Boys.
Right.
Or
sure.
Patriot Front. This is the joke. Proud Boys, Patriot Front, or St. Louis Cardinals fans.
Yeah.
Like, that's the joke.
Right.
But, like, I couldn't even get there because I said Proud Boys, and then people start cheering. Proud Boys. Yeah.
Oh, my God. This was
and
like...
And then, like, you know, then the whole night I was just stopping jokes halfway through to be like, how did you end up here? Like, why are you here?
You can research who's performing.
Right, right. And I was like, who does well here?
Right.
It was just like blew my mind, you know.
They just came to watch the Jew sweat.
Yeah, or just like, wait, there's a Jew here. What do we?
Yeah, it was like you were like the clown over the tank, and they're throwing softball.
Honestly,
they're throwing heart balls.
Yes,
they're waiting for you to snap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you say you were a Jew?
Yeah, yeah.
How that?
No, yeah. I mean, I was going for it the first night. I was absolutely going for it.
You really sticking it
to
them?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you feel unsafe leaving the club?
Absolutely, I did. Yeah. Because I have a joke about gun control that, you know, I thought people there would like because the joke is saying, like, guns are
okay.
So fun.
Yeah.
They're fun. Like,
yeah,
I understand gun ownership.
Yeah.
But just saying I believe in gun control, I couldn't even, like, get to the joke. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think at one point I did say, like, can you heckle my punchlines? You know what I mean? Can I do my setups at least with that?
So you say, I believe in gun control, and they're like, boo!
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck you!
Yeah.
And there was no way out, and no one was leaving, because they didn't want to walk. They wanted...
Yes, exactly. That was what was interesting. I was like, I don't walk crowd. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm pretty, like... I would hope I'm pretty entertaining and good at this. I don't like.
You're diplomatic after a certain point.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
And it was interesting though, that because the second night I actually did sort of like it. it made me feel like a coward or something. But I did go through my set and just sort of remove the radioactive jokes.
Yeah.
It still didn't help. So it was like, this is just like my vibe, my attitude.
Were these full crowds?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they would. That's funny. This is your karmic return for trolling.
Yes, it really was. It really was. And then you know what? Even when the shows weren't like QAnon,
yeah,
that sort of aggro QAnon vibe. The last show I did, there was a very vocal guy in the crowd who clearly just only consumes comedy through TikTok.
Yeah.
Because I started a couple bits, and he would just out loud be like, "This is weird," and he would like literally be like swiping at me to like go to the next joke.
Come on,
for real, just like this is weird. I don't like this. Yeah, swiping in the air. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, "I'm in charge here. You don't get to just dictate what's too weird for me to talk about."
So you were just—it was just hands on the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
For four shows.
They wanted me for five. I was like, absolutely not.
They after you did something?
No, I mean like originally, but I was like, I'm not going to.
Now I'm just curious, like, because there is a point where if you can do crowd work, you know, the management's usually, what do you want us to do? I'm like, I can usually handle it, but you'll get a sense.
Yeah.
Probably if it gets out of control.
Well, that was the thing. After the first show, I like was in the green room just like pacing because it was so crazy. And then they came in like that, you know, they were like, "Hey, how are you feeling?" And I was like, "Bad." And they were like, I was like, "You got to do something. If people are yelling that they're going to like shoot me." And they were like, "Oh, you seem like you were having fun. You were really handling it well." And I was like, "All right, well, just, you know."
Did they ever step in?
No, not once.
Because like that's tricky too.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I mean, that's the thing is, like, I don't even blame the club necessarily because, like, that audience, I don't know if it's always like this, but that audience was full of aggrieved boomers who, like imagining them getting kicked out of a club, just what would have happened to the show and, you know, to everyone around.
Well, that would have been the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would. I mean, it's like these people in airports and on airplanes.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what's happening. I can't. My brain's lost its ability to sort of come up with whys as to why this happens. But the aggrieved thing, like there's something, maybe it's from too much engagement with this information or whatever, but people don't realize what's reality anymore.
Absolutely.
And it's bizarre.
Right.
They spend all their time just immersed in this, and then when they come out into the world, it's like a video game or something. I don't even know what their concept of it is.
I mean, I tour pretty frequently, and I'm all over the place, but that was the first time where I was like, oh, I'm in a different world.
Right.
And I was like, I'm not even sure this is just specific to Phoenix. I just don't perform in this world in whatever city I'm performing in. Like, it's so split, you know?
Yeah, you really felt it. Because we talk about that all the time, that there's these bubbles are real. Mm-hmm. But it's almost sort of like you were performing at a club in a bubble that was not your bubble.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, one woman, one of the best heckles I've ever got was, I think they promoted the show saying I was like a writer-actor for Parks and Recreation, right? So this one woman stood up and screamed, "Park and Rec was canceled, and so should you be." You know, and I was like, okay, first of all, love the syntax there, incredible. Yeah. Secondly, was not canceled.
Right.
We made it.
She stood up to say that.
Yeah. And
oh my God.
And then third, I was like, isn't like cancellation your whole thing? Like, people shouldn't be canceled.
Yeah.
You're against cancellation.
It's all random.
It's all bullshit. But I was just like, it's just so funny to take the crown of First Amendment stuff. You know, that world sort of has embraced that notion of like, you should be able to say anything. But the moment you
even
poke at something they believe in,
lose their mind.
Yeah.
They're such fucking babies.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But let's talk about safety because I go through different levels of paranoia and I'm preaching to the choir usually.
Mm-hmm.
But like, because my grandiosity is inverted and paranoid. Like, I think, like, someone's going to come out. Like, I'm not that high on the roster of Jews to kill.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel unsafe
out
there.
Don't sell yourself short.
But when I leave a club, you really realize, like, I have no security.
I know. I know.
I'm going to this hotel. The fucking guy who works at the hotel could have been one of those people at that show.
Yeah. And then actually that show in particular, my wife and I, we drove to Phoenix. So I was going into the parking lot with California plates and a big like Minnesota Timberwolves sticker on the It's like, oh yeah, I know who this guy is, you know? Yes.
But I guess most of the time it's a lot of hot air and you kind of, it's a sport.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just thinking out loud, but that now that they've made comedy a sport, mm-hmm. the comics that represent that bubble— maybe they see it that way, and maybe it's a little safer than we think. Maybe if they just think that the game's over, walking in the parking lot, they're like, good game.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. I mean, that weekend was an outlier, but even at some of the other clubs I've been performing at, the shows have been fun, but I do think people are empowered now, assuming that the comic is taping the set for clips. And assuming they're helping the show by sort of engaging and yelling and and you know, it's annoying because it's like, I'm not that kind of comic. I mean, it's not that I'm necessarily bad at crowd work, but it's not how use my time on stage, you know?
They've always thought they were helping.
Yeah.
But now like
now there's proof.
Yeah, that they're you know? So that they're part of it. And I guess generationally you still get that the younger people, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I would say it's about, like, my age or younger, yeah.
But usually when you, like, because when I play these kind of states, I really pull my audience. Like, I'm performing for people who are like, thank you for coming.
Yes, for sure,
We didn't, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Surrounded.
Right.
They're surrounded.
Yeah.
But you actually saw your people being surrounded by other people.
Yes.
In the
and then
room.
there's always a strange percentage of people who come see me who only know me from being on Modern Family. So they're fully confused. They're like, what is, yeah, who is, why
Isn't
is he
weird?
Saying these things?
Oh, really?
Saying? Yeah, yeah.
It's so odd that, because I get that too. Like, if people just know me from Glow or whatever, I'm like, I don't even know what that experience would be for them.
Right, right.
But you can't complain because they're there. They came to the thing.
They are excited to meet you. but they've had to sit through, you know, a 10-minute bit where I'm talking about having sex with a gorilla or whatever. So it is, like, a strange experience for them, I'm sure.
Who opens for you?
You know, I have some, you know, sometimes on the road I'll get local people, but Keetra Long is very funny. Gavin Matz is hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rachel Colley is one of my favorite comics. She's an absolute nut.
I don't know if I know her.
She's great.
There's a whole world of comics I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting so fucking old. It's so weird.
I feel you, man.
It all of a sudden happened. How old are you?
I just turned 40.
Well, yeah, no, you're good.
Yeah, okay.
I thought, you know, we were closer in age, everybody, but I'm older.
Well, I mean, I recollect that, you know, doing your podcast was like a huge break for me when I was in New York. Yeah.
Have you done it twice?
I've done it like a number of times. I mean, like live. I did a lot of the like live ones.
Yeah.
And then someone was going through a while ago, someone told me that they had listened to the earlier ones where
the
I was
IBS
on
one.
A lot. But they were saying that all you did was you would go on and you and Mark would mock Orthodox Jews. So I guess there's like multiple episodes of us just ridiculing. And we didn't even know about the tunnels back then, you know.
People are talking about these tunnels and it already annoys me.
Yeah.
I saw Tim Dillon, of course,
mm-hmm.
doing, talking about how he can't talk about the tunnels.
Sure.
But it's like my brain doesn't even focus on that. Why focus on, like, you know, there is a type of kind of bottom feeding brain
mm-hmm.
that knows where juice is.
Yes.
With, you know, sort of passing images or events. It's like, the Orthodox, the Hasidim are weirdos.
Yes.
I mean, but what's more interesting are the ones that are trying to, you know, dig a tunnel to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem.
Right.
So
they can
pray at the holiest point.
This is just a distraction.
It's a real estate problem.
Yes, right.
And but they are, it's one of those things where as a Jew, you're like, look, this doesn't make anybody look good.
No. No, there's a lot of that going on right now, I would say. this is a rough time for PR.
I've talked to Jews. They're just sort of like, I wish they would just stop.
Uh-huh.
I wish the Jews would.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Turn it down a notch, Jews. We don't have to pass, but we can quiet down.
Yeah. This was during the Trump years. I was doing a joke that I was trying to think, like, who's the most famous Jew in America right now? And I was like, I think it's Ivanka Trump. That's not good. It's him or, Jeff Epstein, so.
Oh, my God.
Bad. It's a bad time.
Yeah. Chris Rock gave me a punchline that could kill so hard. Because I've been doing this joke about how I said, it's not a great time for Jews right now. But has it ever been? was there ever a time in history where a Jew said, wow, what an amazing time it is to be Jewish?
I feel safe.
Yeah, and then Brock gave me the punchline. Well, now I'm wondering, like, do I want to burn that joke just now? We just burn the joke?
No, it'll
be all right.
You can do it.
It'll still work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
how many people are going to listen?
I mean, they're going to skip over this one. That's how the biggest comics operate now. They test material on their massive podcasts and then
stage. I usually workshop stuff, and it's so rare that it's so funny when someone gives you a tag.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm always open to it, but I rarely use them.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm like, all right, I'll try that.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm like, I guess that's why he's so big.
Yeah, I guess I'll listen to Chris Rock.
Yeah, yeah, Chris Rock. It's weird when you perform for those guys, uh-huh. when you know they're in the room.
Right.
In the OR, in the comedy store, because he's just sitting back there. I'm like, all right. Because if I was younger, I would have been like, fuck.
Right.
Rock's watching me. But now I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, you're a legend.
Yeah. Finally. I'm a legend, yeah. Yeah, Maron can still do it.
Yeah, he's like upright most of the show. Yeah.
Well, also legend has it's you're not a star.
Exactly. Well, it's like you're right. Yeah, or you're on the downside, you know, you're
Or descended. You just never were huge.
Uh-huh.
But like you have the respect.
Right,
you
right.
You got the respect
yes,
but not the
that's
fame.
That's exactly right. Yes.
A legend.
We're all familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how often do you tour Mulaney still?
Just occasionally, yeah. I opened for him at Madison Square Garden last year. And
how was that for you?
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not this is going to be a shocking sentence. Yeah. I'm not really an arena act. But
I do a whole bit about that.
But actually, there was a moment on stage at Madison Square Garden
where
I remember telling myself, you're psychotic. You're a psychopath. Because after the first joke landed, I was so comfortable. And I was like, I started riffing, making fun of the Knicks like on stage, you know, and it was like a dream of just like on the floor of Madison Square Garden making fun of the Knicks.
Yeah.
Like half the crowd booing, half the crowd loving it.
And you loved it.
And then like the security guards and I got off stage like dapping me up because they like thought the Knicks jokes were funny. Yeah,
right.
I know, but it was like, those shows can
be you got a taste of the arena act.
Yeah, you know, and it's a taste of like, it is one of those things where it's
like Burr in Philly.
Uh-huh.
The game-changing set.
Oh, so good. I listened to that. That's like my,
that's your prep.
That's like another Michael Clayton. I listen to that like 3 times a year.
Bird going off about it.
So good. You have one bridge, just one bridge down. So we did that. We did, a weekend in Las Vegas, but.
How are his crowds?
They're great. They're smart and willing to go into weird places.
Yeah?
Yeah. He has a great crowd.
And what are they your age?
Yeah. Usually? Yes, or younger. Yeah, yeah.
But they all pack out?
Yeah.
It's
kind of
interesting.
I mean, like, shocking to have a fun, smart crowd in Vegas, at like a casino show in Vegas.
I'm doing like a whole story about just not doing casinos because I believe that even if my fans were in Vegas for whatever reason, it wouldn't be choice.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like, well, we got to go to Louisa's thing. And
right.
But if they saw my picture in the lobby, like the win, they'd be like, don't know, you know, maybe we should wait till he comes to our town. Yes. We're having a good time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why ruin it?
He's a lot. But, you know, it's when he comes to where we live, yeah. I believe that's true, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But they come. They come to Vegas.
They come, yeah. And
he's a big act.
Yeah, and it was fight night, too.
What does that mean?
It was like a big boxing night, so that's like a hard draw, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going on in terms of, so this special, what are you going to do with it? Put it on YouTube?
I don't know.
I just shot it. You self-financed
it?
Yeah. But you don't have no big plan?
You know, we'll see where it goes.
Are you going to try to sell it? Because like the YouTube thing, I can't do that. I just can't look at those numbers.
Oh, yeah, well, right. I think if I were to do it, it would be unhealthy for me. It would be, I would to be obsessing there. Over oh, yeah. numbers.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be bothering people to push it.
Oh, God. Yeah. So that's a definite possibility. Yeah. No, but I don't know what the plan is. I wanted to just make, I'm in the editing stage right now. So I want it to get formed into a shape I'm proud of. And
Yeah.
And then we'll
see. I don't know. These guys like Fahim, like, you know, who kind of like have locked in. I guess they're even a little younger than you, right?
A little bit, yeah.
But they've locked into this new mode. It's like they don't even, it's not even about any kind of mainstream outlet.
Right.
You know, they're like, well, I'm doing these videos and I'm doing the YouTube and I'm pushing that.
Yeah.
And that's how I generate my following.
Yeah, no, and I respect that. I've sort of accepted that it's a possibility and like I see that, I see when it works, it really works. Yeah.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of work.
It does. And also, I'm in an interesting spot where I don't have to like tour nonstop to make a living. Like I spent half the year
writing
and
doing what were you on before this Mindy thing?
Hacks.
Oh, did you finish the second season?
We just finished they're shooting the third season right now. They're almost done. Yeah.
Oh, so I saw the second season. Yeah. So this is the third season where what's happening? She's on the road.
She end of season two, she fired Ava, her assistant or her joke writer. So it's like the two of them living sort of separate lives.
Oh, this is season three.
Yeah.
And then they come together at the end.
Well, I don't know. Who can say? that would make sense.
Yeah. I haven't talked to her in a while. Hannah, she's doing all right, I guess.
Yeah, she's doing great.
They're shooting out there now.
I think this is literally the last week of shooting. Yeah, it was a production halted by multiple things, including a strike. So I think technically this is
two strikes and a disease.
Yeah, basically. I think this is technically like day 450 or something.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Do you have a? Are you in it again?
I am. Yeah.
Same guy.
Same guy. Yeah, Ray from the casino.
Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. How many episodes are you in?
I think I'm in like one or, well, yeah, one, but it's always fun.
Yeah.
Hannah's hilarious. Hannah's always telling the showrunners that she thinks I'm endgame for Ava. Like,
oh, really?
We should end up together.
And, oh, that would be funny.
And the showrunners are not indulging that.
No, they're not going to have it.
They don't agree. Yeah.
And when you are you on set a lot as a writer or no?
You know, it's weird. I normally am for shows I work on.
Yeah.
I love being on set. But we made this whole show through the pandemic. So there were like COVID protocols that made it almost impossible.
Right.
So I really was only on set writing jokes and stuff on the days I was acting.
Right.
You know?
But you were on set this time?
I was on set a little bit, yeah.
And do you guys punch up during the do all that?
Yeah. I mean,
try new things?
That's the idea. I mean, like that burden is on the three of the showrunners,
because
they're really the only people on set.
Well, I guess we did that on my show, where it'd just be like, it's not landing.
Yeah.
And then like five guys
come out,
whoever, women and men, and they, how about this?
My first like real job like that was Parks and Rec, and I just remember my first episode, I was on set, and you know, I'm just like a child, like eating snacks, because there's like free snacks, and just be like, this job rules.
It's amazing.
And then, I just remember Amy coming up to me and being like, this joke isn't working. Write me a new joke. And then just, you know, real like feet to the fire moment of like, oh, God. Yeah. So like panicking, writing a couple jokes. And then like,
did it work?
Yeah, it worked. And we moved on. But I was like, oh, yeah, this is like this can be a scary job.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Yeah, that's
that
the
was
job.
Your baptism.
Yes, totally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Have you written any movies?
I wrote a couple scripts during the pandemic.
And?
Yeah, they're funny. I'm rewriting. I'm like I'm punching.
Oh, so nothing's going on with them?
Well, they're like I wrote one that I'm happy with. That's a sort of character study of a showrunner who becomes a podcaster. Actually, I should have you read it. But the second one I got more excited about. So I want to like finish the second one before I show anyone the earlier one.
Yeah, what's going on with all the podcasters?
I don't know. Yeah. It's your fault.
Is it? I'm still old. I mean, I'm old school. We still do audio.
Yeah.
Everyone's just doing their own TV shows.
Yes, yes, yes. That is really something.
But I don't know who's watching what or why. And it's sort of sad that it's become a joke.
Yeah.
That, you know, like everybody's got a podcast. And it's kind of true. And maybe that's my fault.
Well, and I appreciate just coming in and talking. I'm not like really, I'm pre-promoting a special with no home. So I appreciate you, Mark. Yeah.
No, I wanted to hear that Phoenix thing.
Yeah.
So fucking scary.
It was scary, and like I don't blame the club. I blame the heat. I think the heat of Phoenix has like fried everyone's brains.
But I just the element of, you know, your fans being nervous. You're nervous.
Yes.
And you can't, and they're just going to run.
Right.
And it's weird when you think about fan bases where you like sort of like, my fans have my back. Not really.
Yeah, my fans, no. Against people like packing concealed guns.
I guess no one's got your back in that situation.
No one has my back.
And also that feeling of like when someone is removed from a club, then you feel that weird moment of emasculation.
Yes, right. Like I couldn't handle it. Yeah. I needed mommy to take the mean guy out.
And sometimes they do it without asking. Right. And all of a sudden, I've had to stop that.
Yeah.
You know, like it was a couple of weeks ago at the club. I'm doing talking about these different reactions to Israel. And some girl almost like involuntarily goes, you know, free Palestine. And I looked at her, I'm like, okay. Because they immediately jumped on her. I'm like, no, it's okay.
Right.
It's all right.
Right.
She can have her opinion. It's just not I'm talking.
Right, exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, and she was like, but the weird thing about it was almost as if she didn't have control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was out. And I looked at her after I got off because I addressed it and we balanced it out. But she was like, I'm sorry.
Right. Well, it's
an odd thing when people.
Subject, yeah.
Well, that's a difficult subject, but a lot of times people who are heckling, it's not that voluntary.
Right.
Like I've had people just answer me in conversation. If I pose a rhetorical question, you know, and people are up close, they're like, oh, I know what that is. You know,
right.
I'm like, I'm not, what's happening?
I normally have a problem with people just being too enthusiastic or too, just like they're just. You have to just, it's okay.
Relax. I don't even like when they play me up with music.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know, like when they bring me up and they play music.
Right.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
It's not necessary.
What do they play for you?
Well, whatever. But some clubs just do it.
Yes.
All of a sudden, it's like Marc Maron, like, da-dam, ba-dam, uh-huh. And I'm like, come on.
Uh-huh. Yo, that's not the vibe I'm going for.
Well, no, like, you don't need it.
Yeah, right.
So let me walk up there.
Uh-huh.
All right, buddy. Well, it's good talking to you.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
We covered Michael Clayton. That was important.
Yeah. And our, you know, rest in peace, Tom Wilkinson.
Oh, my God. What about music? Are you listening to anything good?
I like this
anything
guy, that Mexican OT. That's his name.
Mexican
OT? Yeah. I listen to a lot of
hip-hop?
Rap music.
Yeah, still?
Yeah, of course.
You grew up with it? That's your thing?
Yeah.
Mexican OT.
It's that Mexican OT.
That Mexican OT. What's OT stand for?
That's a great question.
How many records does he have?
I think just one.
Yeah?
Yeah. But
all
right. Yeah.
I'll check him out.
Yeah, please do.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
There you go. What a great guy. Funny guy. Great guest. He'll be at Dynasty Typewriter in L.A. tomorrow night. Get tickets at DynastyTypewriter.com. Hang out for a minute, folks. Hey, folks. This episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season.
I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Folks, we've got an episode with Jude Law coming up in a few weeks. I recorded it when I was in New York City, and this week we posted, for Full Marin listeners, my immediate thoughts after the interview as I was driving through Brooklyn with my producer, Brendan.
I just get the feeling from him, you know, and even Malcolm to a degree, that, and it's important for me to see it and hear it, is like, they love the job, you know, even
yes.
if it takes them away from their life or whatever, but once... You know, Jude talked a bit about his own sort of like, you know, what am I doing or whatever. But once they get on set, they're like, oh, this is where I live, you know. And all the other stuff is, you know, it's just part of that, you know, dealing with hotel time or trailer time or whatever. But it's still, they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that Henry VIII movie is no slouch of a movie, man.
This is the thing that he just is promoting.
Yeah, man. Firebrand, yeah. I mean,
so he's. I mean, it's about though. It's about what is her name? Catherine
yeah.
Parr. Is that?
Yeah,
who
but
it
it's like, you know, it's about their relationship. He's mm-hmm. not a supporting role,
right?
But it was funny because, you know, we talked about you know, like you didn't want to put on 200 pounds, huh? Because like you know he assumed the posture and there was a lot of heavy clothing and
yeah.
there was probably a you know a kind of like a,
some padding.
Yeah, something. But there is definitely a scene where they're fucking, and I'm like, that's not Jude Law's ass. Like, they brought in a fat
stunt
ass. A fat stunt ass.
How do you like to put that on your IMDb?
Stunt ass and firebrand. But he was very diplomatic about it. He said it was Henry's ass. So Get bonus episodes twice a week on the Full Marin. Subscribe now by going to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. I worked hard on this, Lick. I got it for the most part. Yeah, here we go.
Boomer lives. Cat angels everywhere. Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere. I only made one mistake on that one. And then I fucked up the very ending. When I said Boomer lives. And I forgot to say Monkey and LaFonda. All right.